So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Stinger, if I may quote my most favorite American poet, Jim Morrison. I think it's time you break on through to the other side. Don't do it. I got a couple of questions. I got a couple of questions for Sting. You've been carrying the WCW banner for 9 years and doing a great job. What do you got to show for it? We bring him out, a bogus imposter, and nobody knows about that better than us, because we knew it would get to you. WCW tells you to stick it. We want you to know we're taking over, and with you, there's no stopping us. You jump NWO, you're NWO for life.
Come on, Stinger. Come on, Stinger.
He's gone.
Come on.
They've brought the devil out of him. He reached down.
That right there is your cheap imitation. You get what you pay for, don't you? The real Sting may or may not be in your price range. But the only thing that's for sure about Sting is nothing's for sure.
What does that mean? He's a free agent.
What's she doing?
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
I really don't know why I chose this.
Let's Welcome to Review Away. I am John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting. Wei, how are you?
I feel like I've just been, like, underwater.
Did you get roadblocked mentally?
Maybe.
You hit a mental roadblock on this show, didn't you?
Or you could say I was torture racked. I don't know, man.
Took a few tries?
Yeah. I mean, it's a...
I love this.
Today was just such a fucking... a lot of running around today, and I didn't get enough sleep. It's all my fault. All my fault. I just haven't... Anyway, so I'm a little...
99 times out of 100, I'll feel terrible about something like this. But this particular show, you picked. And yeah. I love the tables being turned now, and this is on your shoulders. This review of the October 21st Mankato, Minnesota edition of Monday Nitro. Mankato.
I did happen to pick the show, so yes, I do blame myself.
But Mankato.
I can't take all the blame.
Uh-oh.
Somebody else was supposed to pick the show last week. And that person ended up picking...
How the fuck was I supposed to know? We already reviewed that goddamn show.
In Your House 3, which... How are you supposed to know? The same way we find out whether or not we've reviewed any show that we've done. Either by memory or by checking the Review Away archives.
You know what's even more funny? This has happened in the past where we have picked something and then, oh, we reviewed it. When this was pointed out to me, my immediate reaction was, no, we haven't reviewed this. And even going back, I still, for the life of me, cannot remember reviewing that In Your House event. Like, it was years back, but usually I have, like, an inkling of an event that we have reviewed. Not a memory of that review. We could have, if no one pointed that out to me, I would have rewatched it, and I would have reviewed this with you, and I would have been none the wiser.
Oh, I think we considered that after the fact. If this happens again, we'll definitely just review it anyway and see if our opinions changed at all. I think we're about to do that, you know, six years. 6 years is a long time.
Maybe we'll have completely, we've grown as people, we've matured as broadcasters and critics. Maybe we're going to truly appreciate or not appreciate something once it's aged a bit more.
Yes, for sure. I mean, I think...
It's like the Big Lebowski effect. It's what everyone says. First time you watch it, you're not going to like it. But you go back, and you're truly going to appreciate that movie. Maybe, maybe Halloween Havoc 1995 is going to have that kind of regenerative power in it. And there's something we missed when the giant was falling off of Cobo Hall. Maybe there's something we missed, and we just panned that show. Maybe there was greatness night in Detroit.
I don't even remember that. So,
well, that's even better to go back and review.
I don't remember, like, a month out, anything I've watched. I've been like that my whole life. Like, I think it's probably from doing a lot, studying for a lot of tests in school, where you just cram, and then once the test is over, you just let it out. I think that's the way I am with these things.
You weren't one to really retain much of this information.
No, because it's useless.
A lot of it was. I always found that in school. As soon as you were done the exam, there's very little you would take away from that.
Talking about that, I was actually more referring to these shows.
Oh, okay.
Right. Well, it's kind of just useless.
Wouldn't that be fun if we could have an exam, a review away exam once a year?
We should do a test.
We could cram for our finals.
Yeah. On all the shows that we watched that year.
That'd be a fun contest.
That'd be awful. That'd be the toughest. That'd be very nerve-wracking. I'm sure some listener out there is planning it right now. The reveal way midterms.
Man, that'd be a lot of fun.
No, it wouldn't.
We'd be a non-semestered podcast.
It would be kind of fun.
In your high school, were you semestered or non-semestered?
I was semestered.
See, we started out in grade 9 non-semestered, and it was the greatest thing of all time because halfway through the year, it means you would alternate your courses between days. You'd do 4 classes one day, the other 4 the next, and you'd always flip back and forth. So come January, you'd have to have 8 exams. And that was a lot. 8 exams on all these topics. But it's like half the year's worth that you have to kind of cram into this. And then come June, because you had already written an exam in each course, if you were above a certain percentage, you'd be exempted from your final exams in June. And I don't want to toot my own horn too loudly here, but toot toot, because I got exempted from every exam that June, and I didn't have to write because my marks were so high.
Oh.
They said, you don't have to do any exams at the end of the year. Every course I got exempted from, and that June, while everyone else around me was cramming for their final exam, dude, I was just coasting.
You're that smart, eh?
But then in grade 10, they changed it to semestered, and there were no more exemptions.
Oh.
I was very upset.
Wow.
Grade 9 was my peak year in school. I had straight A's with the exception of fucking geography, where I got a B+. It's like, are you kidding me, dude? Round this shit up. Like, it's fucking geography, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, come on. We don't need that. We got GPSs now.
And I was a terrible student prior to high school. Like, elementary school... Not great.
You were stealing chocolate and killing Tamagotchis.
I was a ruffian in elementary school.
Yeah, you're a rebel.
But man, grade 9?
Turned your life around.
I was incredible. I was really something.
You still are. The things I could have done in life
where I could have taken my A in French.
You're a pro wrestling and MMA journalist. I don't know what more you could do. You know, this is pretty much the peak, I'd say.
Are you excited? Period. Question mark.
Yeah, I am, sure.
Today's show is brought to us by Brad the Archivist.
Oh, as usual.
You know, when the going gets tough, and you and I badly need a Tim Hortons, you know who comes through? Brad.
Yeah, he's the best.
This past Monday, me and Wei, we were out together, and we went to a Tim Hortons. And I made a joke that, I've run out of my Tim Hortons cards, my credits. And we went in, and Wei got a ice cap.
Yeah.
I got a coffee with a donut. Mm-hmm. And not 5 minutes later did you and I get simultaneous notifications that Brad, our good pal the archivist, had sent us a Tim Hortons gift card. Like Christmas. It felt like Christmas getting this card.
That's right. And then you know what you said? You remember what you said right after?
I wish we got this 10 minutes earlier.
Yes.
We had just gone to Tim Hortons. But nonetheless, we are now drinking coffee right out of Brad's wallet. I want to thank Brad publicly.
Yeah.
Very kind of him.
right out of his bare hands, let's be honest. I don't know what this man does for a living, aside from being our archivist on the message board.
But he's an integral part
whatever
of
job,
the machine.
Whatever job he does, he probably uses his hands. So we're basically sipping from the cupped hands of one Brad, the archivist.
Well, it's very kind of him to include us in his Tim Hortons
he also,
gift
buying. He also makes sure to tell us not to mention him.
But, oh, has he said that?
Yes. Yeah,
so, I ignore that part.
So anyway.
Everyone loves public forms of gratification.
Yep.
Gratitude. Boy, I watched Nitro so long ago, dude. I don't even remember what happened on this show.
I just finished it, and I don't really remember either. So,
you know what's amazing is that I crammed to finish the thing because I was going away last weekend, and I didn't want to watch this at all. So I watched this on Thursday. And then here we come, the day we're going to record this. And way has an hour to go in this thing. And I was like, oh boy, this was not a, this is not a Nitro that just zips by.
No, it wasn't. I'll tell you what kind of added, like, this is going to be, I don't know. I don't know what your viewing of this was like, John, but for me, this might be a little weird of a show. It's not going to be me at my best. Let me just preface that.
You're coming in with very few opinions.
Yeah. And I think partly that has to do with us or myself not having had to review a show in a bit of time.
You're a little rusty.
Yeah.
Even though you were on this show last week doing The Marine 4.
You know, it felt like such a long time ago. But, you know, it felt like 2 weeks ago when I last had to watch a show critically. And I think I just, you know, when you get used to watching shows for the purpose of a review, you start to watch with a different eye than I would if I was just a casual viewer. And I think I kind of got into a groove with doing a lot of reviews, and then I kind of stepped out of that groove for like a couple weeks, and then I found it actually really difficult to get back into it, especially with this show, trying to watch everything attentively and trying to form an opinion afterwards. And that plus I was just tired anyway, so this is going to be one of those shows.
Well, by the end of today's show, we're going to find out how Wei gets his groove back.
Okay.
Because you're going to dive headfirst into the Mankato, Minnesota edition. I love that name, Mankato. It reminded me the whole time of Okada.
Mm-hmm.
Okato.
Yeah.
Maybe this was influenced by it. I think one of the first major AWA shows in history was in Mankato, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Great. Some historical reference here for this edition
cool.
of Nitro.
That's
this
really, was really interesting.
This was actually a very notable night during the Monday Night War. This was when Raw was only 1 hour and Nitro was 2 hours.
Mm.
So, Wei, you watched, I guess not a full 2 hours because the commercials, which I always say, I wish so much they were a part of these.
No, not me.
I would totally sit through at least most of the commercials from an episode in 1996.
Okay.
But nonetheless, this was the same night that Bret Hart was going to go on to Raw and announce where he was going to be going. WCW had been courting him, going after and offering him a ridiculous amount of money to jump over to WCW. And he had come to an agreement with the WWF, the infamous 20-year contract, which would have been expiring next year.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy. So that was the announcement that was going to be happening head-to-head on Raw.
I mean, next year from like this?
Yes, from in 2016.
That's incredible.
That's 20 years.
Wow.
20 years is a long time.
What were they thinking? That Bret was still going to do matches at this point?
And how funny it is that 20 years later, Bret will be affiliated with the WWE.
He kind of jumped back into the 20 years.
Yes.
Finishing out the contract.
So that particular night, I mean, Vince McMahon and the WWF, they were really pushing for Bret to go on to Raw and tear up the WCW contract and give them a big fuck you for everything they did with Medusa. And I mean, you could see on this broadcast, I mean, very different tone when we had Tony Schiavone on play by play and when we moved to Eric Bischoff in the second hour. Hmm. My God, was Eric Bischoff so smug and just hateable.
Definitely.
Which is not a trait I would want my play-by-play announcer, but God, was he just... You hated this man.
Well, I wonder how early do you think the seeds were planted for a heel turn from him?
I think they were always there. I think especially if you were... I mean, Eric Bischoff was not your typical play-by-play announcer that, you know, would be that trusted voice that traditional play-by-play announcers would play. Jim Ross,
He took credit on air for basically being the man behind the scenes.
Yeah, he did. So it was a very easy transition into the heel character. Much so in the case of Vince McMahon after everything that happened with Bret Hart.
But Vince would at least play a more innocent, like back when he was purely a play-by-play guy, would play a more innocent.
Of course.
Guy.
He was always the very over-the-top lead announcer.
And would kind of not acknowledge him being the boss.
No, that was never made public on the air. But Eric Bischoff, yeah, there was always that wink and a nod towards his role in the company. But especially on this, I mean, the jabs he would take and how uncomfortable it would make, in particular, Bobby Heenan on a commentary. We will get into all of that. But this particular edition of Nitro, they were well ahead at this point. They outdid Raw with a 3.2 rating on this show to a 2.6 for Raw, which was a big Raw. It was built around Mr. Perfect coming back and having a match, which was a swerve, and of course, Bret Hart's announcement on Raw. So this was a fairly loaded edition of Raw going up against what I thought was a pretty pedestrian episode of Nitro in comparison, though it was the go-home show for Halloween Havoc that year.
Hmm.
So we start off hour one. Tony Schiavone and Larry Zbysko are the announcers. I will say, God could Raw use something like this, where we do some kind of a shift. Because, yes, Nitro was 2 hours, but they gave you little subtle changes between hour one and hour two that made them distinct, and I liked that. I think Raw, you could really benefit from just a change in whether it be commentary, just little things to differentiate the hours, I think are...
Why, though? I mean, I know to freshen up, but if you watch a football game, they don't switch commentators midway through. I felt it kind of made things kind of disjointed, you know, not to have one broadcaster guide you through the entire episode.
I just kind of like the change in pace. I like the change in the announcers. I mean, it's not like a make-or-break scenario, but I feel for a three-hour Raw, and especially with that commentary team, I think to just freshen things up for the second hour, I'm not opposed to this at all. Though not Eric Bischoff primarily being your play-by-play voice. Mm. So we had Schiavone and Zbysko. Did you enjoy Schiavone and Zbysko?
They were, you know...
Fair.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same type of Tony Schiavone stereotypical commentary of just overstating a lot of things that didn't deserve to be overstated.
They are coming off this video from the prior week that was shown by Eric Bischoff to Randy Savage of Elizabeth professing her love for her ex-husband, Randy Savage, and Savage leaving the arena that night and going off in a limo, and we were not aware of what Savage was up to and had this shattered, this once heroic figure from this video.
This was the storyline driving the entire episode of Nitro. Was they're working an angle where Liz, who had previously sided with the NWO, had a change of heart and now wanted to get back with Savage. And Savage was just torn.
Yes, and Savage would be challenging Hogan at Halloween Havoc for the WCW title, while at the same time, his contract was coming due with WCW, and that was another kind of cloud over all of this, was the long-term future of Randy Savage with the company. So Zbysko has some words of wisdom for Randy Savage about his ex-wife, asking Randy if he wants her to ruin his life again. They showed the video of Liz making this plea to Savage, and Zbysko says she looks sincere, but he is skeptical.
What were their terms in real life at this point?
They had been divorced for a number of years at this point and made for a very awkward working environment when Elizabeth was brought into WCW when Savage was already there. And then not just working together, but making it a key part of the storyline with Elizabeth and Woman aligned with Ric Flair, and the storyline that Elizabeth had gotten this great divorce settlement and was spending all of Randy's money and was with his hated rival, Ric Flair. And it was that program that started to turn around WCW's house show business before the NWO. So she was an important part in 1996 in that point and being pegged with Ric Flair and later the NWO.
How awkward.
Like, could you imagine in TNA if this was a storyline where
Kurt Angle,
Drew Galloway, well, they did it with Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett, but I mean, Drew Galloway and Taryn Terrell are now in TNA and they've divorced.
I think it's like it's we could try to think about it in, you know, terms of other wrestlers, but I mean, I think a more relatable way to think of it would be any of us and having to, you know, play out previous relationships in our own lives, or anybody listening, their own previous relationships with an ex at work. Like, I'm going to work today to pretend to get back together with my ex-girlfriend who I'm going to see every single day at work. That's got to be a trip, like some type of crazy mind fuck. Or it could be somewhat therapeutic. I don't know. Who knows? It's just such a... Wrestling is just so weird and so interesting for the reasons like this.
They announced that Savage is scheduled to take on Chris Benoit tonight, providing he shows up, and we will get Sting versus Mr. JL. Jerry Lynn under a mask. Mm-hmm. One of the...
How ambiguous.
Yeah, we're going to call you JL.
What do you think the JL was supposed to stand for, if not Jerry Lynn?
Just lose? I don't know. That's probably his instructions from the road agent.
Just lay.
Our first matchup saw Bobby Eaton against Chris Jericho. I would say if these two met, if this was Bobby Eaton of like 1990 and Chris Jericho of 2000,
okay,
what a match this would have been. But this was
what great technology that we'd have to be able to transport.
Well,
what a waste of that technology. I invented a time machine. What's the first thing I'm going to do? I'm going to take Bobby Eaton in his prime and take Chris Jericho in his time, put them together.
Listen, this was Bobby Eaton. We could still go in 1996 here. They showed.
So they somewhat met in the middle. He was kind of, decreasing from his prime, and Jericho was ascending to his prime.
Yes, yes. They were on different paths in their careers.
Yeah.
They showed Six, Sean Waltman, and the fake Sting, Jeff Farmer, in the crowd with Sean Waltman. With a device that some of our younger listeners, they wouldn't even know what this was. This was a camcorder.
What?
A camcorder.
You mean it wasn't a cell phone?
No, it was not. It was. You could not dial anybody on this.
He's not Snapchatting on this thing.
How far do you think we are from an iPhone being released that doesn't serve the function of being an actual phone? It does everything else but the actual call function.
They have that. It's the iPod. Like their current iPod touches, I think they still sell those.
Like I feel like the iPhone 8, they won't even bother with a dialing mechanism.
At some point, phone calls will be a thing of the past. Yes, perhaps.
So Sean Waltman, he's being very social. He's around people and using this camcorder, and they're under an NWO banner. And the members of the NWO, they would all take turns coming out to this area of the arena to watch. And Six was scouting Chris Jericho, who he was going to face this Sunday at Halloween Havoc. Later, we would have literally the announcers ask, what are they watching? Because there was no one they were involved with at the pay-per-view in the ring at that time.
They were really just there to kind of like...
Be seen. And distract from the match.
And in the case of Sean Waltman, just wave his arms, just like open his arms up and wave them like he kind of has always obnoxiously done in his career.
So they are out
there. They certainly weren't there to film because, like, most of the time they weren't even pointing that camera at the ring.
Oh, so. Did you notice his was there a lot of shakiness probably?
I would hate to be the editor of these tapes is what I would say.
They go to a break, and presumably they just stood in the ring during the entire commercial, and they come back and the bell rings. God knows what they were doing in the ring just standing there. Nick Patrick is the referee with a neck brace, and this was before he had joined the NWO officially, but he was being heavily teased as the heel referee for the NWO. Bobby Eaton hits a power slam, nearly lost Jericho from doing that. And Eaton may have hurt his eye here because he immediately grabbed it. Jericho then hit a spinning heel kick and then a springboard drop kick, sending Eaton off the apron to the floor. Eaton then snapped his neck on the top rope. Crowd wasn't into this much. There was a double knockdown from punches landing at the same time. And then Jericho missed a reverse elbow into the steel post on the floor. Jericho then blocks Eaton off the top. Jericho's knocked down, and Eaton hits a top rope knee drop, gets a two count, and then Jericho hits a jumping kick and a missile drop kick from the top to get the win in 7 minutes.
I think you're right that, you know, this match with these two could potentially be something special in a different environment. But this, and that's one of the problems I have with watching this show, is just everything in Ring was pretty much just background to either the storylines that were kind of they're trying to talk about with the NWO or Sting or Macho Man. Everything in the ring just did not matter at all. And I mean, look at this. You had, you know, Sean Waltman and Fake Sting up there in the rafters the whole time.
Crowd wasn't into like anything in these matches.
It was just kind of wrestling there for wrestling's sake. And I understand it at the time. I mean, you know, who's Chris Jericho in 1996? But it's tough to watch these in hindsight because, you know, the matches really are not that worthwhile, at least on this show.
Chris Jericho would actually face one of the men in the ring at the following pay-per-view, World War III, in November. Do you know who he fought?
One of the men in the ring. Like with him here?
Yes.
Aside from Bobby Eaton?
Yes.
Oh, Nick Patrick. Oh, interesting.
Okay. So it was upwards and onwards for Chris Jericho in 1996. Schiavone interviews Jericho. He says it's a coincidence that Six is watching because he's got him in 6 days.
It was coincidental.
He was growing as a...
He could actually use that promo like every Monday night.
And that's what this could have been a save for many a Sean Waltman program. Yeah. And said he's coming out with a loss and Six will suffer. And the NWO will suffer their first major loss. So Jericho was growing in 96, a very different contrast from Jericho of even 3 years later.
Well, we've even talked about watching Jericho in 2001 in his WWE run and how a lot of his promos didn't age very well. And certainly in 1996, that was even more evident in that this was a Jericho playing a more immature character and I think much less refined than he is today.
Then we had Tony Schiavone throw to a video package. He mentioned Halloween Havoc on Sunday, and there was no match that was more bitter than this rivalry. And did he throw to Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage and this use of an ex-wife to shatter a man's livelihood? No, it was the bitter rivalry between Rey Mysterio and Dean Malenko, which we then proceeded to just see a simple highlight reel of Rey Mysterio where the bitterness between these two, it just came through the screen and slapped me in the face. No. Only 6 more days till they finally get their hands on each other. The bitter rivalry between Ray Ray and Dino.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming 90% of our audience has not seen this show, but might be listening to us for whatever reason. But if you haven't seen this highlight video,
it's incredible.
The highlights are great. Yes. This is, I mean, you know, Rey Mysterio certainly, you know, even in this early on in this WCW run, was doing things that he wouldn't do at all.
Not even a fraction of. I mean, this was in the mid 90s. I mean, there was no flyer that topped Rey Mysterio. And this package, I just thought the collection of spots was. To me, that would sell me on this pay-per-view.
Yes, it was great, but it was so cheesily done.
Yes.
It was just like clip, 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 and then like the most generic rock track over top of it without like any type of lyrics or, you know, no VO, no, like no life to it other than just, like it definitely looks like a YouTube fans highlight.
And many times when you watch a
Titantron, basically.
Many times when you watch an old WWE show on the network and you see this, likely the real song has not been cleared. WCW, I will guarantee you, this is probably how it aired in 1996.
Maybe. Yeah, you bring up a good point. It could be it, but it just felt kind of lifeless in the middle of this otherwise very loud show.
But the spots were incredible video.
Yes.
So to get Dean Malenko ready for his bitter war with Rey Mysterio, it was Dean Malenko against Jimmy Graffiti, the former Jimmy Del Rey, the gigolo of the Heavenly Bodies.
Well, how do you go from that to he got into hip hop and loved to tag? And
let's just say in 1996, this dude certainly, his body was not being described as heavenly.
But I mean, of all, like, do you see Graffiti when you look at this guy?
First of all, here is his outfit, okay? He was wearing, like, this Public Enemy-style jersey that just read Jimmy Graffiti in, like, the goofiest font imaginable.
I think Banksy has a thing like that. It says Banksy.
And these jean shorts with this random color design around one of the legs, not both of them. Holy Christ, did this... this was just the worst gear.
And like, was this this guy's debut?
This was, only appearance as Jimmy Graffiti. There were more, it was only a handful.
I really do understand that these are just like pretty much nothing more than jobber matches. These guys are probably never to be seen again. But the fact that this guy, they went through the trouble of making this guy his own ring gear, making him somewhat of a new gimmick for this guy. You would think that it would at least warrant a promo before the match or some type of video or some type of introduction. There's nothing like that.
He's just caught at the side of a building.
Hey! Exactly.
I'm Jimmy Graffiti.
I would love that.
And I'm going to tag you.
Yes. But nothing. It's just like, we go from the highlight package to the entrance of this guy that nobody's ever heard of and you will never hear of again.
Graffiti. What a stupid name. He hit this tornado DDT and then a sit-out powerbomb. Way more offense than he needed already. Malenko just comes back with stomps on the apron, almost landed on the announcer's desk, and they had to do the fall a second time with the two going to the floor. Then the fake sting is showing in the crowd with the camcorder, and Shivani is just asking if... He's like, why is he scouting this match? And then Shivani on his own starts contemplating, Rey Mysterio couldn't be joining the... No. And he just dismisses this as a potential thought that maybe the NWO is scouting on behalf of Rey Mysterio.
I do appreciate, I think it is an announcer's job to try to fill in the gaps when logic kind of deems it.
Well, there's a large one here.
It's so tough to buy, though, because it's so obvious that there's no explanation here. There is no logical explanation here. And so when your announcer has to reach that far, it kind of kills
it. Like, why'd they even show him in the crowd?
They're supposed to be taking over the entire show, I guess.
Oh, no, they're filming this.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what their plan was. Maybe they were going to tape it and then, release it, pirate it. That's the idea. I'm sure that was the idea. Like, people sneak in camcorders at movie theaters and they pirate movies. They're going to release something.
They're going to be selling bootleg copies of the Mankato edition of Nitro
from a shitty handycam that otherwise you could have just recorded.
This would be way more effective in today's day and age.
If it was a house show, yeah, maybe. But, come on.
Shivani notes that this program has more viewers than any wrestling show in history. There was zero heat for this match. Vertical suplex by Malenko. Running crossbody through Graffiti against the ropes. Both go to the floor. Graffiti runs Malenko into the post, and then Graffiti comes off the top of the missile dropkick, lands on his back and into the Texas cloverleaf as Malenko gets to win in 6 minutes and 44 seconds. And Malenko has one of Ray's masks that he shows off to the camera. And gets the win going into Halloween Havoc, where he will challenge for the Cruiserweight title.
Again, just pretty much another squash match. And I think I often have to remind myself that this was back in 96, where it was the norm to just have meaningless squash matches on TV. But with that said, I mean, Malenko, D. Malenko in 1996, just a real pleasure to watch in the ring, just to see his movements and the way he flows. It's just so smooth and so technical that... certainly there are guys today that, look as good, if not better, but I just think he's just really great, especially, at this period.
This was going into 1997, where Dean Malenko would be named number one in the PWI 500.
I could see why.
And that was the biggest controversy ever.
Why is that?
Oh, man, the outrage over Dean Malenko being named number one.
Well, what's the criteria?
PWI picking.
Are we talking about just technical wrestling or
no,
a draw?
They always ranked as if wrestling was legitimate too.
Oh, okay.
So they would go with that. So they were always wonky rankings, which I always just took them to be what they were. But man, there was so much debate that PWI got so much juice out of that year with Dean Malenko being ranked number
one.
What
was their reasoning?
Whatever reasoning they wanted. I mean, you have to. In PWI's world, they had to acknowledge pro
wins
wrestling.
Wins and losses. You must acknowledge wins and losses. I mean, if you're
yeah,
going to.
Yeah, they would.
So then how could they justifiably say Dean Malenko then was number one?
No, they thought. If I recall at the time, they believed that 1997 was a year where there was no clear definitive number one, and they felt that Dean Malenko had the best year of all these wrestlers.
Oh, okay.
And
interesting.
Oh, yeah. It was a big controversy at the time.
We're still talking about it today.
Did you watch the replay? The Pep Boys Power Pin of the Week.
Yes, I did.
Where we got the replay of the cloverleaf and the slogan for Pep Boys. America's Automotive Supercenter. Everything but gas. Everything but gas available at Pep Boys.
Okay, cool. What's wrong with that?
It's a lengthy kind of slogan.
Everything but gas.
America's Automotive Supercenter. Everything but gas.
Okay.
Well, anyway.
Oh, yeah, it sucks. It's really bad.
Fuck Pep Boys. They plugged WCW Saturday night.
We've got Mr. Lube.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Everything but...
I don't know. They pretty much have everything.
Yes. Plus, fuck, where's this show going? They plugged WCW Saturday night as the most watched wrestling show on the weekend. God, was there like a...
Is this true? Is this true or not?
Listen, I'm sure it was the most watched wrestling program on the weekends at the time, but God, did there feel like there was such a small dick complex involving WWF and WCW at this time.
Yeah.
Like everything. Like,
yeah.
Oh, the most popular Sunday at 2 p.m. airing of pro wrestling in these following states. Like, holy Christ. That took us to a heel, Diamond Dallas Page, against Sergeant Craig Pittman, who was accompanied by Heavy Long.
Yes.
Holy Christ.
Yeah, this is a big Teddy.
These were two Teddy Longs.
Yeah, this is Teddy Long.
Heavy Teddy.
It's a big Teddy. Yes.
Man, I have seen all incarnations of Teddy. I have seen Scott Putski Teddy Long.
Mm-hmm.
This was Heavy Teddy.
Okay.
And then we've
ZZ Teddy Long.
ZZ Teddy Long.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, tag team manipulator Teddy Long.
Yeah.
I mean, just many incarnations of this man, but holy Christ, was he big.
He was pretty fat here.
96.
Yeah.
DDP. This was pre-jeans. He's wearing pink tights. And then Pittman, Sergeant Craig Pittman, was in his army fatigues. Page jumps Pittman from behind, hit a spinning clothesline, and then puts 10 fingers in the air, with Schiavone noting that he's giving himself a 10.
No.
This was, the fingers were not joined together. So I wonder if maybe like the early onset of arthritis maybe led to the diamond cutter
sign. I think, wasn't it the self-high-five deal that he was doing back then?
Yes. Okay. So this was two self high fives, which would equal a self 10.
I see. Okay.
Pittman then kicks out. Page lands onto Nick Patrick as the fans are cheering wildly at something going on in the ring or in the crowd. Pittman then runs his shoulder into the steel post, continues to attack the left shoulder, and then applies the code red, the straight armbar.
Mm-hmm.
The code red.
No, the code red.
Ronda Rousey's favorite finish. The code red.
Which she picked up from Sergeant Craig Pittman.
And then Teddy Long gets himself up onto the apron, which was probably no small feat in 1996, distracting the referee while his own guy has applied the code red. And Schiavone pleads that DDP has given up, and Pittman gets upset at Nick Patrick, allowing DDP to hit the diamond cutter and get the win in 2:54, and then Craig Pittman is upset at Heavy Teddy, and Long is upset at Nick Patrick. Can you follow all this shit?
No, not really.
Oh, my God.
Craig Pittman, by the way, sounds like a dude who works in our office. Oh, it's Dave.
Oh, right, Dave, yes.
But, I mean, I suppose it's a good enough wrestler's name, Craig Pittman. It's awfully generic. I feel like everybody works in an office with a Craig Pittman.
But are they a sergeant?
Well, I don't know. But this finish was very confusing.
I used to have a Craig Pittman action figure, actually.
Seriously?
Yeah.
As a sergeant?
Yeah, they had those.
They actually made one?
They made a Sergeant Craig Pittman
action figure.
And somehow
you had one?
I went to, I was like up north at like a cottage, and we went to a Kmart one day, and they had all these WCW action figures.
And the one you happened to choose.
I bought like five of them. Because I never saw WCW action figures anywhere in Toronto.
Okay, but one of the five you happened to choose was a Sergeant Craig Pittman.
I can't remember if me or my brother who bought it, but yes.
What were the other four? Did you get the Jimmy Graffiti action figure?
No, they didn't have a Jimmy Graffiti one. Yeah. I probably would have gotten that one. That would be a hell of a collector's item. I would love to have that one. I think there was a
Five whole people would want it.
There was a Randy Savage one. There was Craig Pittman. There was a Giant. I can't remember the rest.
I'm amazed. I'm amazed at every facet of information about this conversation. The fact that they made a Sergeant Craig Pittman action figure and the fact that you owned one.
Next time I don't know if they've been thrown out or not. If they are in my parents' basement,
please,
I will bring one and we will display it on our
lovely
Review a Raw set. As Sergeant Craig Pittman, a forgotten figure in WCW history.
The innovator of the Code Red.
The Code Red.
The armbar.
Yeah.
So what was supposed to happen in this finish? Was Teddy was not supposed to...
We essentially had two heels with, I guess, the tease that Craig Pittman was going to be turning after Teddy Long screwed him.
Okay, but were they supposed to put the heat on Nick Patrick somehow in this?
Was so confusing. He literally had four heels involved here.
Were they saying that Nick Patrick was intentionally ignoring the tap out?
No, I think they were trying to push that Teddy Long distracted Nick Patrick.
From his own guy winning the match?
Yeah, so that's why there was dissension between Pittman and Long.
I didn't get it.
No one did. Schiavone then interviews Nick Patrick. He says that Paige gave up... And he didn't hear him give up. He just saw the rope break, blames Teddy Long, and accused of being the NWO referee behind a mask. And Patrick denies this allegation and says it's Randy Anderson.
Yeah.
Throwing Randy under the bus.
He said he's in way better shape than the guy in the mask.
Wow. Wow.
That's kind of making fun of yourself, though. I don't know.
They showed footage of Ric Flair being attacked and left laying backstage by the NWO, which would set up legitimate shoulder surgery that Ric Flair needed. And then Jeff Jarrett cuts a promo calling himself an impact player. Little did he know.
Jeez, wow, there you go.
And says he is the smartest and he has a match with the Giant at Halloween Havoc and will be taking the place of the injured Ric Flair at the pay-per-view. So to get him ready, it was Jeff Jarrett against Ron Studd.
Big Ron Studd.
This was Ron Reese, who would later go through different incarnations in WCW, all of them shit. He debuted as the Yeti at Halloween Havoc 1995, after the Giant died and rose from the ashes. And then he was brought in and turned into Ron Studd after his trainer, John Studd, though there was no relation between the two. And to put into perspective, I mean, look how big this guy was. And he sucked. It was amazing. Okay. The size of this guy in the mid-90s and the fact he amounted to nothing tells you how bad this dude was.
There are a lot of big guys, though, who amounted to nothing.
Well, this was one of them. Ric Flair comes out before the match to the biggest reaction on the show so far, and he has Jarrett do the strut, which was led to just boos from the crowd. Then Flair does it to a bigger reaction.
What was, like, did Jarrett just one day decide to steal that for himself?
I mean, it goes all the way back to Jackie Fargo.
Right.
I think was the first one to do the strut.
Same,
I mean, it was a big thing in Tennessee.
But that plus the figure four, was there like some type of relation there? What was the sort of a?
I mean, the figure four. I mean, that was something that a lot of guys just used that particular hold. I mean, it's most famous, I guess you could say, from Ric Flair for that generation. But yeah, there was.
In Jarrett's case, though, that plus the strut, it seems to scream somewhat of a like direct Ric Flair influence.
Yeah, and I think they wanted that here. I think they wanted people to look at Jeff Jarrett as this kind of pupil of Ric Flair at the time in his absence while he was hurt. At least that was the goal here in this match, to make Jeff Jarrett look like his kind of student.
I actually think Jarrett strutted better than Flair here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well,
he would be in my PWI top 100 struts.
Well, Flair had a bad shoulder as well.
True.
You got to take that into account. Ric Flair, just tons of charisma here. They just did dueling struts, and then he shakes Jarrett's hand and exits. Studd lifts.
I was waiting for Ron Studd to strut.
No, there was no strutting from Ron Studd, unfortunately. He lifted and tossed Jarrett to the mat. Jarrett then holds the rope to block a vertical suplex, and then Jarrett hits a vertical suplex and applies the figure four. They did not get too damn ambitious here with Ron Studd, as the match went a minute 28, and the announcers naturally ask if he can do this to the giant. So it at least made sense that he was in there with a big guy, and he's going to be facing a bigger guy on Sunday at Halloween Havoc in the giant, and whether he can get him in the figure four. So I thought this was very good. Shivani is then with Jarrett. He calls the giant match the most important match so far for him in WCW. It's time for WCW to play offense against the NWO and be the hunters. And then Flair joins him and just cuts a Ric Flair promo saying, "You don't cry, and sometimes you get so good you take it for granted," and says the NWO was smarter and they played dirtier. And they show the giant in the crowd, and Flair says he'll be in Jarrett's corner on Sunday and promises to kick the NWO's ass once he is healthy and ready to return. A good promo from Flair.
Yeah, definitely.
Then we got a countdown and pyro display to usher in the second hour of Nitro. No expense spared in 1996.
No. And what was Raw staging at this time? Was it anything beyond the big letters?
It was the big Raw letters. Right, that was the entrance at that point. And now we flip on over to the announced crew of Eric Bischoff, Mike Tenay, and Bobby Heenan at the traditional announced table away from the ring, whereas Shivani and Zabisco were ringside for the first hour. And then we have Bischoff, who's wearing this gray jacket and salmon shirt combo. Like, this just scream punch me in the face.
Yeah.
And says they have not seen Randy Savage in the building yet. And Bischoff says that Savage either gets his head in the game, or we will never see this man again. Indicating, somewhat hinting at the legitimate contract issues with Randy Savage at the time. So at this point, they weren't sure what Randy Savage was going to be doing. So to kick off the second hour, we got Lex Luger against Roadblock.
Yes. Did you get that action figure?
No, I don't think they had enough time to get a Roadblock with Roadblock accessory out to the marketplace. Do you want to describe Joseph D'Acquisto, a.k.a. Roadblock, and his attire?
Well, is this guy, like, first of all, is he anybody that I would recognize from anywhere else?
No. Okay. Did some stuff in Japan, but a very non.
The man is a very large man.
Yes.
Like, he
kind of looks like Balls Mahoney a little.
Exactly. Like, I thought it could have been Balls Mahoney, but this guy's even taller, but certainly as wide as Balls Mahoney. And even wider because the man was physically wearing a Roadblock. Like you would find at a traffic stop. He was wearing this around his shoulders as he walked out to the ring. And, you know, who was it? Zabisco or Heenan?
Heenan.
Heenan would Tenay.
Okay,
Tenay would explain that, oh, here's one of the... Or actually, it was Bischoff. I'm just going to go through everybody.
Are you sure?
Bischoff just explaining how this is one of the local talent that is trying to make it their name in the WCW stage.
He's just off the interstate.
Yeah, but again, exactly. He was picked up off the side of the road. But again, no build or setup for this guy. You know, he just kind of comes out. And here he is, a guy who thinks he's a traffic device.
This guy was wearing an orange and white horizontal striped shirt with spandex pants that were yellow and black with road marks over them. Like, it looked like Tugboat and the Assassins had a garage sale, and out came Roadblock and ran into the middle of traffic to a construction site.
Why not stop sign? Or, you know.
They didn't give it enough time for this whole group to grow.
Yeah.
Under construction.
That's great. What else do you have? Yield? Right of way?
Yield. Oh, my God. What else could there be?
Yeah.
You know what the old timers would tell them to do in the ring? Yellow light. Yellow light. You're young.
Yellow light.
Don't bump so much.
Oh, boy. Speed bump, another one. Yeah, we could come up with a great,
holy shit, the group that never was in WCW, led by Roadblock. Oh, did this match suck. Did you catch the shot of the woman blowing kisses at Lex Luger? Please tell me.
No,
you saw this.
I honestly was not watching that closely. Didn't think I would miss that much.
You know what? We're going to continue to talk about this.
You're going to actually log into the network to dig this up?
I rewound this.
By the way, I mean, I don't want to publicly announce it too much, but if you don't have the network, there are ways you can easily watch this show.
Well, I posted this on the message board from Daily Motion. It was very easy. I screwed up on the feedback this week. Someone told me Monday morning that there was some problem and they couldn't actually leave comments. So I'm pretty sure I fucked up.
Okay, whatever.
On the feedback this week.
People probably aren't going to watch this show anyway.
I think many people are going to go back and watch this.
Maybe
actually,
now
after today.
Okay, so yes. You're actually still in the midst of trying to look this up, so you can find...
Way too many clicks, I find, to have to go... Here's my problem, okay?
You're talking about the
network. Now I want to find... I wrote down the time here because I knew I wanted to show you this. I knew you'd miss it. Okay, they do have all the chapters here. Let's find this. It's at...
So John is looking up the episode of Nitro from October 21st, 1996.
Oh man!
Oh my God! I just saw the girl.
Okay. Wait till you see this. It is so creepy.
Tonight at Sioux Falls, La Crosse, and here tonight in Mankato, I want to thank all the fans who come out and enjoy.
She's in a trance, like she's just delivering them. I assume they were to Luger. They could have been to Roadblock.
They could have.
Man. Wow.
Jeez.
The highlight of Nitro was that crazy
that
woman
was worth it,
blowing
sure.
kisses.
Thank you.
47:25, folks, if you want to go watch
okay,
that on Nitro.
Thank you very much.
Roadblock is clotheslined to the floor, and he just freaks out in anger. Pulls Luger to the floor, and Roadblock is run into the post. Arn Anderson, then, the best part of this match, was his insert promo, saying that time is running out on Luger and knows he can say, I quit, as they would get set for their match this Sunday, which would turn out to be Arn Anderson's final match.
Oh, wow.
Yes, a historic match.
Oh, that's amazing. So weird to have such a serious repercussions coming out of a scene like this.
Yeah. The final build-up. Arn Anderson, one of the great promo men, building up his final pay-per-view match. Final match! And Roadblock is sharing the screen with him. I mean, just ridiculous. Roadblock hits a splash in the corner. Bischoff apologizes to Sting publicly on the air for all of WCW doubting him. And then Luger hits a slam as he comes off the ropes. And then he goes for the torture rack, which Bobby Heenan says there's no way he can get him. He can't get him. And Luger picks up Roadblock and drops Roadblock.
Heenan was right.
So what does he do? He goes for a second torture rack. To which Bischoff just says, oh, he's punishing him. He's just trying to punish him.
Yeah, he's doing this on purpose.
He's punishing us. So he lifts him up and again loses him and drops him.
Oh, I felt so bad for this
boy.
Guy. I felt so bad for all of them. Like, I mean, they're on... This was live, right?
This was live.
They're on live TV, and this guy, Lex Luger, I know he's a strong guy, but, I mean, given the task of lifting in a very awkward position, a 400... or a kayfabe 400-pound man... It's no easy feat to be able to pull off live.
Luger ignored the warning signs and just hit the gas.
Yep. Went for it, though, one more time.
And he lifts them for the third time, and this time gets it. To their credit, the announcers went insane to sell this feat of strength by Lex Luger.
It did work out, and you definitely have to credit Lex Luger here.
There's a key lesson that sometimes even the worst joke can be saved by the greatest laughter. And it's the reaction that can compensate for a shitty execution. And that's what the announcers did here. They covered for some horrendous torture rack attempts, but then when he got it, man, did they sell this as huge.
I don't know about saying he's punishing him when clearly there's no...
He's dropping him.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing punishing him. That's what he's doing.
So luckily, Lex Luger gets it on the third try. It was actually oddly inspirational. You know, this little scene.
Never give up.
Never give up. If your 400-pound opponent can't get on your shoulders, you just keep doing it. How long do you think he would have stayed out there until he actually got this?
I would like to believe Lex Luger would still be there in Mankato.
20 years later.
Trying to get Roadblock up. They showed an NWO shirt commercial with Hall Nash and the Giant. And then, what a bizarre... placement for our 1-800 collect ad. It's Lee Marshall on the phone from the site of next Monday's Nitro. They sent this guy to Phoenix a week before.
You really think they did? Come on.
He was probably backstage and plugs Nitro for Phoenix next week. gives us the temperature update and a time check.
I love it.
Heenan ends that they should take him and leave him in the desert, which is only funny because they would literally do that to Ric Flair in Phoenix years later.
Leave him
in the desert.
Mm-hmm. Somewhat creative. I mean, let's say you get 1-800-COLLECT as a sponsor. I suppose this is the most you can do.
Should we explain that to younger people as well as the camcorder, what 1-800-COLLECT would be?
Do they not have collect calls anymore?
I don't know what the go-to collect number would be for people. Remember when there was like ATT? Call ATT?
I imagine those still exist. Or you could just hit zero.
Did you ever call collect?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't tell you the last time. It must have been over 10 years ago, but I probably didn't have any money.
Man, what a life. Pay phones, calling people collect.
Well, I mean, if you don't have a cell phone now, you're really fucked. I dropped my phone while I was in Saskatoon. I dropped my phone on the first day of the trip, and my screen died. And I haven't had, like, a weekend where I felt so helpless in many years than the weekend I had without a phone. And I think I just realized how dependent I've become.
Was it liberating?
Not at all.
Oh, no.
No, I felt helpless.
Wow.
It was awful.
Did you get a new phone or did you just get this one fixed?
I fixed this one. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But it was like I couldn't breathe.
Oh, I'd go out of my mind if I lost my phone for a whole... Especially in a... You're on a trip somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your lifeblood.
Mm-hmm. It's awful.
We're so dependent on them. Anyway, there was always 1-800-COLLECT if all else failed for you. Then Bischoff is congratulating the Atlanta Braves, who were playing that night in the World Series. It was Game 2, Atlanta versus New York.
Okay. And?
Very significant for the wrestling war.
I get it.
And Eric Bischoff notes that the Braves are winning the game.
I want to congratulate the Atlanta Braves. Big win over New York. We kind of make that a habit around here, don't we? Big win over New York. Gotta love it. And they're ahead 4-1 here tonight. So it looks like the Braves are... Come on, Bobby. Get back. Come on.
And then says that they make it a bit of a habit over here of beating New York. And Heenan was clearly uncomfortable at this obvious knock at the WWF. And what a metaphor this particular World Series was to the WCW-WWF wrestling war, where the Atlanta Braves would win that game that Monday night, October 21st, and they would be up 2-0, seemingly on their way to destroying New York. But what happened? New York came back and won the next four games and kicked Atlanta's ass.
Well, who would you say were the Goldberg and Steve Austins of those teams?
I mean, this was 96, so I would say Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter were key contributors.
Rock and Austin.
That, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeter kind of has a somewhat resemblance to The Rock, I would say. A little bit.
Sure. Both dated wrestlers, I'm sure.
Alex Rodriguez has definitely dated a wrestler.
Sorry, that's him.
I'm sure Jeter has probably been involved with someone to do with wrestling during his life. So there you go.
All right, cool.
That's all of our baseball talk. We've got to get into real matches like Harlem Heat against the American Males. Harlem Heat accompanied by Sister Sherry and Colonel Parker. More Bischoff references to shutting out New York with an update that the Braves are up 4-0. Stevie Ray hit a slam to Riggs. Bischoff then just goes completely, he has no interest in this match, it appeared. He starts apologizing to Randy Savage and his family for showing the footage of Elizabeth last week, says his intentions were good, and calls Hogan a manipulator and a con man. And the American Males are in control as they come back from a commercial break. This match got two segments. Stevie kicks Bagwell from the apron, and Booker gets the advantage. Hall and Nash then appear in the crowd, and Bischoff says the NWO is attempting to gain control of Nitro, and Hall and Nash are seen wearing the nose strips that Harlem Heat would wear.
Breathe right.
Booker comes off the top into a drop kick from Bagwell. Bagwell then knocks Booker to the corner. There's a double drop kick to Stevie. And then Riggs knocks Colonel Parker off the apron. Stevie hits a Harlem sidekick from behind and gets the pin as it looked like Bagwell was trying to make the save. There was plenty of confusion. This looked very bad. They tried to put the heat on Nick Patrick for fucking this up. So they aired the replay. And the count was completely normal. Nick Patrick did a fine job.
All the Nick Patrick finishes on the show were terribly executed.
Like, was this guy just shit at fucking up finishes?
He's too good.
Was this the warning sign for Starrcade next year with Sting and Hogan that this was not the guy to fuck up a finish because he can't? He's too good?
I don't know.
This just looked like Bagwell was late making the save. Like, this did feel like a screw-up, even though Harlem Heat, you figured, were going to win this match.
Yeah. They had the finish on the hard camera as well, so you could tell Buff Bagwell was or Marcus Bagwell was hesitating to step in. It just didn't look good.
Bischoff says that Sting is in the building, but it's not what you think. This could be a big one as they go to commercial break. No one with the cliffhanger teases than Eric Bischoff to go to commercial break. Afterwards, we get another tag match involving the Fantastics. Bobby Fulton and the late Tommy Rogers, who just passed away this summer, against Ming and the Barbarian, accompanied by Jimmy Hart. Heenan describes Ming and the Barbarian as cannibals that jump from tree to tree.
Wow. Okay.
That's quite the description.
They're going to eat their opponents.
They try to double team Ming. They hit a double drop kick. The announcers just utterly destroyed anything the Fantastics were trying to do. They flat out said they have no chance. This is a mismatch. They are cannon fodder for Ming and the Barbarian, which is fine. If that's what they were brought in to do, then this match should have been booked as such and not as much offense as the Fantastics got here, who at one time were a very prominent tag team in the NWA. And here it was just, it was like the announcers were calling one match, and I was watching another. But the Fantastics were given a lot of offense in this match. Barbarian hit a backbreaker, ran Fulton into the corner. Bischoff is teasing surprises with Sting tonight, says the NWO Sting is here, who we had already seen numerous times throughout the night in the crowd. There's a spinning heel kick by Bobby Fulton, tags in Tommy Rogers, who hits a missile drop kick off the top to Barbarian. There's a double-team suplex, not supporting Bischoff's narrative at all here, saying that the Fantastics are merely trying to avoid a trip to the hospital as they're hitting double-teamed maneuvers here on Barbarian. Barbarian then catches Rogers with a crossbody. There's a running boot from Ming, and they pin them in 5 minutes and 19 seconds.
Yeah.
That's it.
I have nothing to say. Sorry, I have nothing to say about this.
Oh, we're building up to Mr. JL. Yeah. Bischoff then has another message for Savage about showing the footage last week. He says he feels it was probably a mistake to show this footage of Elizabeth last week. So how is he going to make this right? He's going to show the goddamn footage a second time. This piece of garbage. Yeah. So they replay the entire video of Liz apologizing to Savage and crying, regrets siding with Hulk Hogan, says she is lost, she needs Randy, and she feels the same way today as the day she said, I do. Which happened apparently multiple times between their real marriage and their storyline marriage.
Mm-hmm. They had a split screen here with the video and, of course, Savage's reaction. And I have to say, I thought both Liz and Savage here were acting pretty well. For wrestling, at least. I thought Liz did
dude, this was
job.
Probably the best acting of Liz's career. Not that she had much of it. She was always silent.
Yep, delivered those lines very well. And Savage didn't have much to do but look, you know, very emotional and look almost like incredibly emotionally wrecked but without having to show it. And I thought he actually did a great job breaking down here afterwards, you know, as he was walking towards the back, and he would do a thing where his back was towards the camera, and it would look like he was walking normally as he would just kind of turn away and walk without saying a word, but then occasionally he would just stumble and break down, and you could assume that he was crying. It was actually just very subtle and actually very well done.
Bischoff says, I feel like I've cut his heart out and handed it to him. It's pretty intense. He apologizes for showing the footage to Randy, and I guess for replaying it and building this entire show around it as well.
And under his own logic, how is he going to make things better? By showing more footage.
Randy, this is so terrible, but if you could just watch it one more time. And then Bischoff says, if Randy Savage can shake this, Hulk Hogan won't be able to stop him. Then we go to JL. Mr. JL and NWO Sting. What a match. The entire NWO entered the arena back when they were a much manageable unit. Smaller, compact NWO.
Back when you could actually name all the members.
Yes. They surround the ring, minus Hogan. There was no Hogan on this show. Too big for Mankato.
He was off filming Three Ninjas.
Yes, he was doing Three Ninjas. There was a big slam by Sting. Stinger splash applies the deathlock. And we didn't even get a finish because the real Sting appeared, coming out in black and white for the first time as the Crow version of Sting.
This wasn't the full change yet, though.
But this was the morphing into the black and white.
Yeah.
And
when was his last appearance prior to this?
It was probably just after Fall Brawl, I think.
Right.
JL's in the Scorpion Death. He's in the submission for a long time as Sting enters and grabs the fake version, and he hits the Scorpion Death Drop and then hits jumping elbows as the NWO is watching on. They emphasize Sting wearing their colors of the black and white, and then he hits the Stinger Splash to the back. So it was just everything was reverse for Sting, except for the Scorpion Death Lock, which he did not apply inverted. So the NWO gets in the ring, and Ted DiBiase welcomes Sting, and Nash quotes Jim Morrison for Sting to break on through to the other side. And Hall says that Sting has carried the WCW banner for 9 years, he has nothing to show for it, and WCW told Sting to stick it. And Sting then refers to their cheap imitation laying in the corner, says the real Sting may or may not be in their price range, and the only thing for sure is nothing's for sure, and he would leave. And as they go to break, Bischoff says, Randy Savage is here! Don't flip the channel! And this was kind of laying the groundwork for what would be one of the most successful angles in WCW history with the Sting character. And I'm not quite certain if this was the last time he spoke for that prolonged period of time, but it might have been. So this was set up well with Sting. Afterwards, Chris Benoit, we saw this giant gap on the network version, and then I realized, oh, it's a Benoit match, so it doesn't have the marker.
Oh, yes.
So Chris Benoit is out for his match, and then Randy Savage comes out all in black, looking ridiculous. Black cat, black, like he like looked
black
like
castled jacket, yes.
Like he looked like something out of a cartoon, almost, just all in black.
Well, he was sad.
He was mourning the loss of his marriage. And
it's funny to just think he has a version of the Randy Savage outfit just for times when he's sad.
Sad moment, Randy. Bischoff goes up to him and apologizes for last week and says, I've got more video footage for you, Randy. Yes. You were just waiting for this guy to just pop him. Said, this fucking guy and his VHS tapes. So Benoit apparently just hung out in the ring for like the next 20 minutes. They show the most strange video that, let's be honest, if this aired today, there would be so many logic holes to this fucking video to try and get your head over.
I didn't know what I was watching.
This was so confusing. So it's all in black and white. Hogan is on the set of Three Ninjas. He looks 10 times worse than Randy Savage. These have to be the worst looking individuals in wrestling at this particular time in 96.
Like, if you haven't seen Three Ninjas, it was just like the third Three Ninjas
the
or something.
Escape from Mega Mountain.
Okay, whatever. Hogan has a part in this, and they put him in this terrible wig. Like, he looked like Zachary Ty Bryan, like from Home Improvement.
Jesus Christ.
You know? Like, it was that type of 90s kid's hair, but on Hulk Hogan. And then he had this, like, weird kind of bondage outfit on as well. It was so weird. And to see that him in this getup try to play the character of Hollywood Hulk Hogan in this supposed, you know, backstage behind the scenes video. It was so weird. Very weird.
So Hogan's on the set and he brings in the director of the film, Sean McNamara of Three Ninjas fame.
Yeah.
And then they keyed him as director, but then they also keyed not anymore.
Because he demanded that the NWO take over this film to stay on budget, and the Giant walks in to become the new director of the film.
This
was the seed planted that would eventually become Vendetta.
What's that?
The Big Show movie that he's in. The WWE Studios movie.
Oh, okay.
And that other movie where he's the Knucklehead. Big orphan. Knucklehead. Oh, God. So the Giant walks in. Hogan is now going to be the new producer of the film. And they start coaching Elizabeth to convince Randy Savage that she loves him. Hogan says that they are spending over $100,000 an hour. So Liz better not waste their time. Liz says Hogan has ruined her life twice. And they send Elizabeth to his trailer, getting upset that she won't do this interview or this message to Randy Savage. So then we cut to inside the trailer. So before we were being spoken to by Hulk Hogan. Now we were a fly on the wall in the trailer and we were not supposed to see Hulk Hogan outlining his plan to Elizabeth.
What was that all about out there, huh?
What more do you want from me? You've got to leave me alone.
You know,
please.
First thing, you better quit playing games with me. You're going to learn that you don't embarrass Hollywood out there in front of the cameras, dear. Because what Hollywood wants, Hollywood's going to get. Right now, I don't believe. I want you to make me believe that you can lie good enough. And you better go back out there, look in that camera.
Please.
That's what I want. Make him believe that you love him. That's what I want from you.
Leave me alone. Please.
It was hidden camera footage of Hulk Hogan.
Yes. Not even changing it from, like, it was in color outside where we were to be seeing it to black and white security footage. No, it was just all black and white.
Well, we know Hulk Hogan has a bit of an aversion to hidden cameras.
I did not even put those two together until you just mentioned that.
Yeah.
Hilarious. So Hulk Hogan, here he was, not realizing he was being recorded against his will.
Yep, speaking to a woman. Another man's wife.
And starts outlining this whole private chat. And Hogan tells Liz not to embarrass him while there are cameras on him.
This would be a great clip.
So
this would be a great clip to use.
Can't let Gawker get a hold of this footage. And Liz does not want to cooperate with this plan. And it ends with Hogan cutting a promo on Randy Savage, calling him the macho creep, and he'll see him in Las Vegas. I didn't know what the fuck this was. I didn't know what I was supposed to believe.
I give them credit, you know, with all this NWO stuff. I give WCW credit for trying to differentiate it stylistically. And I know what they're going for. They're going for, you know, more of a renegade, low-budget type of feel.
This was overthinking it, though.
Tough to watch. Like, this was just like,
it was long.
Long, boring, poorly done. And it extended all the way to that sold out pay-per-view where they took that to a whole 3-hour show. Took that kind of idea to a 3-whole-hour show. It was one of the worst pay-per-views we've ever watched.
We go back to Bischoff, who is still with Randy Savage in the arena. He goes to leave without saying a word.
And Benoit is still there.
Benoit is just stuck in the ring, standing there, watching all of this unfold. But then Randy stops and he returns and he says, "It just occurred to me how fragile friendships and relationships can be." And then he looks at Eric and says, "Business can be fragile," in reference to a contract issue that none of these fans would be aware of at the time. And says even marriage can be fragile. And then tells Hulk Hogan that life is fragile. And Eric Bischoff responds to this rather innocuous comment as way more serious than I took it to be. Eric says, Randy, you're not going to go there. And the show ends with the tease, I guess, that Savage is going to Las Vegas to not just beat this man for the title, but to kill him. And his life might end on Sunday if you order this pay-per-view. A man might die. Was that the hook we were left with?
I suppose, man. All I know is, like, I was like scrambling to finish the show on very little sleep, no caffeine, and
show might have been written on no sleep.
I was so confused about the whole 2 hours that I just watched. It was just such a not a show that I expected. I mean, I admittedly just picked this because we needed a show, and I googled, oh, what's in the news this week? Sting returns. I googled Sting returns, and this was the first thing that came up, so I picked it for that reason. I had no idea any of this other shit was on it, and I after watching it, I was just, I don't know why I just watched it. I don't know why it exists.
I remember when this show first aired, my buddy in school, him and I, we made fun of this promo forever. Like, he would always come up to me. And that's why I instantly remembered this promo when he started it, and he'd always joke. He's like, it just occurred to me. And we made fun of this promo for months and months and months. We got so much joy out of how shitty this promo was in 1996. That is the legacy of this episode of Nitro from my own childhood, mm-hmm. and making fun of this Randy Savage promo.
Well, I'm glad we, some reason, had a reason to watch it. Yes.
So maybe one day we'll accidentally pick this show again to review a few years down the line. But that will bring an end to a bizarre episode of Monday Nitro.
Very bizarre.
Are we going next week? Now, next week, we're going to do a review, and then in 2 weeks' time, it is going to be the anniversary show, correct?
Well, there was some controversy in regards to that, as brought up by Brad the Archivist as well.
Well, I don't see the controversy. We started this show.
The controversy was that if we count 52 episodes in 1 year as the benchmark, then the anniversary would actually be next week. But if I don't know if we're accounting 52 weeks.
This is the anniversary episodes of the first show. Your anniversary has to be based on the first show, which was September 13th.
We're simply picking the date that's closest to the 13th, are we not?
Let's not overthink this too much.
No, let's not. Who gives a
shit? We're going to do the anniversary in 2 weeks. Okay. We're still not sure what we're doing yet. We're batting around some ideas. The Brain Trust will come up with an idea. We're open to suggestions as well if you want to leave it in the message board or tweet us at Law Radio for the anniversary show. We are going to – well, we'll announce it obviously next week. But what are we going to review next week, Wei? I'm not so sure.
I don't want to pick. I don't want that responsibility. I'm not picking.
Are we going with what we discussed earlier?
I don't know. No, I don't want to, actually.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
I do not want to.
That's fair enough.
We were going to talk, what is it, Halloween Havoc 95.
96.
96, sorry. The one after this? This was 96?
This was 96.
Oh, whoops. Okay.
Yes.
I'm just
We've done 95.
Are you sure we haven't done 96?
We've definitely not done 96. Okay. I double-checked.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do that.
That's fine. We'll skip Halloween Havoc 96. I can't say this show really drove me to want to see this.
Maybe in October we'll do it.
Okay. Maybe we'll come back. We've set the table. We can eat anytime.
Exactly. Is there something else on your mind that you would like to review?
Boy, that's such a loaded question.
Should we go to the feedback, the request?
Yeah, we should. Let's do a listener request based on the fact that we are coming up on the anniversary.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something people want to see out there. Whether it be, do you have it handy?
No.
Okay.
I will very shortly. Why don't I just try to fill up the silence with these words that are coming out of my mouth as we're both scrambling to look up some stuff.
The new review away request thread on the message board. All right.
All right.
See, it's all just suggestion. I liked the votes before. It gave it a more of a democratic feel.
Huh.
Because, I mean, we just have all these. I don't know how badly people really want to see the Blackjack Brawl from the UWF in 1994.
Whatever. Just, you know what, John? Close your eyes and hit your scroll wheel. And wherever it lands closest to the top, that's the show we'll do. Stop.
I landed on the August 9th, 1999 edition of WWF Raw featuring Chris Jericho's debut. Do you want to review that?
That sounds great. That sounds good.
That is up on the network. They put up the 99 episodes.
That actually worked out pretty well.
So we're going to see Chris Jericho add on 3 years for his infamous debut in the WWF, the August 9th, 1999 edition of Raw.
I'm surprised we haven't done that one yet. Are we sure we haven't done that one yet?
We'll find out tomorrow if we haven't. No, I'm pretty sure we have not.
All right, okay.
Okay, that's an easy one. It's on the network. And then in 2 weeks, it'll be the anniversary show. 6 years of reviews.
6 years of this. Wow.
Which after 6 years, some of our weeks are going to be random reviews, like the August 9th, 1999 edition of Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, I don't think people care anyway.
All right. Maybe I will share a great story next week about working at my first ever wrestling event. Working at it the very next day in 1999.
Wow. I love it.
Where I worked for a Toronto independent wrestling promotion.
Oh, okay. I might there might be video footage of this.
No, there definitely
there is
not.
Oh, okay,
no.
Never mind.
But that will be on next week's show. We will make sure that I don't screw up the feedback thread over the next week, so you can leave feedback. Not to say there were many thoughts coming out of the Mankato, Minnesota Nitro of 96.
If John screws up, you guys can make the thread for him. Feel free.
So that is it. We are going to sign off, and we'll be back next week with a brand new show. As always, we have all our regular shows up. We're going to have a new episode of Bauer and Pollock Wednesday night. Thursday is what's next. Friday, it's the final episodes of Review and Impact. Catch them now while you can with Brian Mann and Nate Milton. And then this coming weekend, we've got live audio wrestling Sunday night at 11 Eastern with Dan Lavransky, Jason Agnew, and myself. And we are going to be joined Sunday night by Brett the Hitman Hart.
Are we?
How would you describe this interview, Way?
Oh, well, Brett is at his most candid. He's always been an honest speaker, but he's brutally honest in this one.
An explosive interview with Brett Hart. Uh-huh. And I don't like to play things up ahead of time.
Yeah.
We will let you be the judge. But this interview, I think you'll want to hear it on Sunday.
Yeah.
It was enough that we warranted that we were going to move it up a week, and Vampiro is scheduled to join us the following Sunday now.
Mm-hmm.
So Bret Hart, this Sunday, on Live Audio Wrestling. So you can check that out, liveaudiowrestling.com, iTunes. You can follow Way, at Way0937. You can chat about Nitro with him. You can talk about art with him.
Art? Sure.
Anything you would like. Yeah. Waiting is open to discuss. And we will chat with you next week as we review Raw from 16 years ago, featuring Chris Jericho's debut in the World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah. I've got something to say. Just occurred to me how fragile friendships and relationships can be. And you, Eric Bischoff, you and I both know how fragile business can be. Even marriage is fragile. But Hulk Hogan, life is fragile.
Wait a minute. Don't, Randy, go there. You're not going there. Randy, you can't mean.
He means
Randy.
He means it, Mike.
No way. Randy.